Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Lydia Fonseca to the broadcast. Lydia is the Chief Information Officer of Quest Diagnostics, a $7.5 billion provider of clinical laboratory services. As CIO, Lydia leads the IT function, enterprise architecture, and integrates process, data, and systems across the network. Prior to working at Quest Diagnostics, Lydia served in multiple technology roles at other major healthcare organizations, including LabCorp and Philips Medical Systems. Lydia is a member of the board of directors at Gannett, a large media holding company, and is also an advisory board member at Medivo, a healthcare data company. Lydia earned her bachelor's degree from the University of California, Berkeley, and received her MBA and Master of Business Informatics from the Erasmus Graduate School of Business. I recently caught up with Lydia by phone in her office in New Jersey, and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 2, infrastructure, as we discussed security and how she balances risk mitigation with the need for innovation, Principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as we discussed how she encourages her team to be customer-facing and what that entails. We also discussed her board membership at Gannett and how Quest Diagnostics handles the huge amount of data at its disposal, as well as a variety of other topics. This is Peter High. Please consider reading my new book, Implementing World-Class IT Strategy, How IT Can Drive Organizational Innovation. The book covers topics such as the CIO as strategic facilitator, the development of IT missions, facilitating corporate and divisional strategy, the development of IT's own strategic plans, the development of enterprise architecture, reviewing, refreshing, and communicating strategy, and several other topics, all told with stories from leading CIOs from a variety of major corporations. You can find it at Amazon.com, my publisher's website, Wiley.com, and at your better bookstores. Thank you very much. Lydia, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT. I thought we'd begin with your role. You're the Chief Information Officer of Quest Diagnostics, and I thought we'd take a moment to talk a bit about the company itself. You could provide a description of it, as well as your role within the organization.
Let me kind of start by giving you a little bit about Quest Diagnostics. And, you know, we are a leading provider of diagnostic information services. That's both clinical laboratory services as well as diagnostic information services. You know, 2014 revenues were in the $7.4 billion and growing at 4%. You know, interestingly for us, you know, we see about a third of the U.S. adults, and we connect with half of all physicians and hospitals in the country. They leverage our services, you know, each year. You know, and so we're touching, you know, the samples of 500,000 patients a day. And, you know, so we have an expansive test menu. And, you know, thousands of tests ranging from routine, think about cholesterol, diabetic testing, to more advanced genetic cancer neurology testing. So really the full gamut of medical testing. We count on the services of 45,000 employees. We have about 700 PhDs and MDs across the company, which is great because, you know, harvesting and leveraging that knowledge is pretty significant if we think about innovation, both on the medical side, but also on the diagnostics, on the data side as well. We operate 2,200 patient service centers around the country. So that's a little bit of the scale and the kind of the scope of Quest from a business perspective. On the data and technology front, we do have the largest private clinical database. We have 20 billion plus tests, you know, laboratory testing data points. We have more than 250,000 providers and hospitals that are leveraging our Care 360 connectivity platform and hub. And again, so from an interaction and having the reach, it's been a phenomenal coming here and having that kind of a reach has been great, you can imagine from my perspective. We do integrate with more than 400 EMRs out there, you know, that providers, and especially with a lot of the incentives and the migration to EMRs and more electronic means. So we are integrated with, I would say, pretty much any EMRs that you can think of. If our customer's using it, we're connected with them. Very nice for us that we do have a patient portal so that patients can actually access our services directly. And we've have more than 2 million patients that are accessing our MyQuest, you know, patient portal. So we're also more and more having that interaction with patients as well, not only the providers and the hospitals. We do have a significant big data backbone and analytics platform that really enables, you know, population health, gaps in care type of, you know, analytics, quality reporting. And it is leveraged, you know, by partners, including the CDC, including, you know, groups like Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center and also UCSF, just to name a few. And then, you know, as we think about Inovalon, and we'll talk about that a little bit later, we've actually, by bringing that together, we have our own rich big data backbone and data set, and then bringing it together with what Inovalon has. It's really enriching what is already, you know, one of the most expansive, you know, clinical databases around, really. As a CIO, my role, in addition to the typical things you would expect the CIO to be responsible for, I have a couple of other responsibilities here, which it's also the essence of who I am and what I enjoy doing. Okay, one of the things that I'm responsible for is all of our client-facing products. So if you think about the connectivity, how we set up a client so that they can interact with our services and the capabilities themselves, it's my team and that develops those. So it's great. We also develop the analytics products, whether it's sophisticated reporting or the population health tools. And, you know, it's nowadays also in partnership with like groups like Inovalon, bringing a new capability that maybe neither one of us could bring on their own. And that's another kind of key part of our thinking is, you know, when you combine data sets, can you actually offer something to the market that's novel? And talk about Inovalon, we'll talk about what makes that novel. And then the other thing that I'm responsible for at Quest is that I'm the executive sponsor of our business transformation program. And one of the things that we're doing as a company is that we're really transforming our business model. And there's three key goals to that business transformation program. One is that we're really focused on delivering a superior customer experience. Think personalized digital experience, content, and services, and just a very responsive design that really supports the interactions of whether it's patients, providers, hospital administrators, you know, payers that interact with us. You know, it's about an experience and the interaction and the nature of that experience. The second goal of that transformation program is operational excellence, and there we're standardizing and streamlining our operation end-to-end. So we're literally going through our business processes, and, you know, if it can be done in three steps rather than six, we inject automation where it makes sense. And we also, in that process, are speeding up our time to market for new products, new tests, and new solutions, whether they be data solutions or, you know, consulting solutions or what have you. We will speed up the development and the time to market for those. And then the third piece of that transformation program is really that platform for growth. And that's where we really focus on those innovative, powerful analytics. And that's for us, you know, if you look at our brand, you know, our brand idea, unifying ideas, action from insight. And so this is how we bring, you know, this idea of action from insight to life is really through these powerful analytics and informatics that helps, you know, providers and patients make better decisions about their care. You know, that's my role as a CIO. I wanted to give you a little bit of Quest as a company, what we're doing on the data and technology front, and then a little bit about the role that I play. And, you know, I'm having a lot of fun here, so I wanted to share a little bit.
That's great. No, it's a wonderful background, Lydia. I appreciate you going through that with me. And it strikes me as you're going through that description that you have a lot that is non-traditional. You appropriately started with kind of the traditional CIO experiences. But as I think about the patient portal, the population health tool, the fact that yours is a team that's getting so involved in customer experience, the Inovalon offering as well, these all suggest a higher level of value than is typical of a lot of IT departments. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the way in which you and your team structure customer-centric aspects of all that you described, if you've got special cardined off analytics team that you have developed. How have you thought about staffing and org structure to be able to do kind of the multiple sides of what you've described in terms of your area of purview?
Sure. So we have a set of people that we call their frontline, you know, folks. And I always think of these groups as team members that can work interrupted, right? Because at some point, once we go into development, I want my developers and test engineers and those folks to just be doing the work and making sure that the releases and the capabilities on time. So the way we've structured is that we have on the front lines technical product managers. And the technical product managers really manage the various families of products that we have. And that includes analytics, informatics-based products. It includes the portals, whether they're, you know, a patient portal or a physician portal. They also will include, you know, we also have portals that we provide to our hospitals and our payers because their needs are, you know, we want to make sure that those portals really provide to them the specific services and insights that they're looking for. And so on that front lines, we have these product managers, and we also have product managers for our lab and our billing, right? So our kind of what we call core platforms. And we have that front line of product managers. We also have business relationship managers as well on the front lines that are really working both internally. The product managers work a lot with our marketing teams, and you know they spend a lot of time with clients as well, making sure that we understand requirements. And that's what I meant about them being able to work interrupted, because they really are, you know, working on and defining, helping us to define requirements, identify demand, understand the customer's needs. Then we have these business relationship managers that, you know, when we get requests, they work with the business partners, both internal and external, to then take those requests. And, you know, again, we're a business, and at the end of the day, we got to make the right investments. So those business relationship managers actually make sure that the business cases are put together for the investments that we want to make in technology. And so those two groups are really on the front, you know, working at what I call the demand side and making sure that we understand. And that's both the near-term demand as well as over time, you know, where we're taking our portfolio. Then we have your architecture, what we call our design and architecture team. And, you know, once we approve that, hey, this is where we want to go, this project makes sense, then our design and architecture team starts working on the design of that, both from a user experience as well as from a technical design. The architect team, they make sure that the solution is going to fit within our overall enterprise architecture and that it's going to integrate well and it's going to really advance and support, you know, the architectural principles that we operate with, our framework. So that's the next step. And then from there, it goes to our business analysis team, or our BA. And they really, you know, they're the ones that translate the need into a technical specification. And then from there, it'll go into our centers of excellence. So we have development, we have analytics, informatics, and business intelligence team. And they are the ones that either develop or integrate solutions that are related to data, informatics, and analytics. And there we have, you know, some pretty really good expertise, you know, big data, sophisticated reporting, developing algorithms, both on a clinical as well as on informatics-driven algorithms. So we have, you know, that team that really handles all of that kind of demand. We have a software engineering team for any application development, and those applications are really across the board there, as well as client-facing, as well as core middleware, as well as backend. And the reason why we do that is because we want to make sure that our developers not only are following good principles of developing good quality code, but also we actually operate in both, you know, an agile as well as a waterfall methodology, depending on where that solution is. For, you know, a lot of our new solutions will go agile because even sometimes our customers don't always know, you know, that all of the requirements. And so we want to, you know, deliver iterations pretty quickly. So we have our software engineering team is also in one place. They're a center of excellence, and they really support, you know, the various products, whether they are our, you know, industrial strength laboratory platform, and they also, you know, work on the portals and also work on third-party platforms that we offer to the company to run the business, right? So that's, so we have that software engineering center of excellence. We also have a PMO because at the end of the day, we want to make sure we deliver projects on time and according to the budget and with the scope that we agreed to. So there's a PMO. We have a group that manages all of our projects. And we have an infrastructure, and they handle all of the infrastructure elements, right? Network, data centers, all of the desktop and connectivity that we need, not only in our case, not just in the company, but because a lot of our services with our customers really start with a connectivity solution. That's how they're able to access our services. So that group really supports, you know, both the company and our various patient service centers, but also they, you know, supports us in terms of making sure that we have, you know, the infrastructure in place to support the business. And we have also a connectivity team, and they work on the specific client projects. There, you know, once we win an account, there's a number of things that we need to do, and we need to interface with the client, and they focus on setting up the connectivity and also the services and the menu that we're going to be offering to every customer that we win. So as you can see, we have a number of centers of excellence, and then, you know, we have what I call that frontline that really helps us on the demand side. Then we go into the architecture to make sure that the design and the architecture makes sense. Then our VAs get in there, get the requirements documented properly so that our developers and our test engineers can then take that spec and deliver according to actually meet or ideally exceed the expectations of the client. And that's the setup. You know, it's not I would say it's probably, to me, organizations are not right or wrong. It's really about how do you deliver for our customers and the business, so that, you know, we deliver on the operational, the financial, and the client goals that we have. So hopefully that gives you a little bit of an overview of some. It's not every single group that we have, but just generally speaking, these are the major ones.
Great. A great overview and certainly a very logical structure. I like the way that you kind of parsed your way through that and then summed up describing the logic of how the different organizations work together. You mentioned earlier, Lydia, that, you know, you've got vast amounts of data, but by your descriptions, by a little bit of homework that I did, 20 billion test results in the environment, processed in excess of 150 million medical test requisitions in 2014. Testing services touches about a third of the adults in the U.S. So just extraordinary amounts of data, needless to say, and structuring that and doing something with that obviously sounds like is well within the bailiwick of your team. And I know that the real-time analytics at the point of care, Inovalon, as you've mentioned, is taking some of that data and sort of rethinking how to use that information at the point of care. I wonder if you could take a moment to describe that.
Sure. As soon as I stepped in the door here, you know, one of the first things I always look at, it's a perfect time, right, to kind of do what I call a walkthrough, you know, and because you want to know, you know, okay, I want to understand, you know, where we are. So I'll tell you, one of the very first things that we set in motion is if you, you know, when you think about your information and your information assets, it's, you know, number one, they need to be housed in a way that they can then be leveraged. So I tell people sometimes, a lot of companies that I've walked into, you know, they have a lot of data marks all over the company. I call those data cemeteries because usually people go and bury the data in those data marks, never to be seen again. So I'm a big believer that you first need to bring your information into and organize it and tag it and structure it and in a place where it can then be leveraged. We've done that step. That was, as soon as I walked in the door, that was one of the first things that we set in motion. When you have that and the information is in one place, and it's tagged, and it's structured, and it's also categorized as well. And this is an important step because categorizing your information and then partitioning, especially in this day and age where, you know, we need to be very mindful of protecting our data assets, right, for a number of different reasons, but just really the whole, like, you know, protecting very valuable, you know, very important information. So we've tagged it, we've put it in one place, and then we then started partitioning and then, you know, understanding the criticality of the data. The next step that we've done is to say, okay, now that we have it in one place and we have it tagged and organized, then we started to really look at what are the views that our customers are looking for. And the views are, how do they want to see that information? How do you want to visualize it so that it can really be leveraged and useful? And so, you know, that's, we've layered on top of our repository, also these visualization tools, and then the ability again, and there's technologies available these days where you can then move information in big quantities and in large sizes in a much more efficient and faster way, and still keep it very well tagged and protected so that you really are really unlocking that information and making it then available, right? Again, but with very clear that authentication and access points, and so there's a whole thought behind not just where you have it, how you structure it, how you tag it, but also how people access it, whether it's inside or outside the company. So a lot of thought went into that whole process of how are we going to make it available, how do people access it, how do we authenticate who they are to ensure that we really the right information is viewed by the right individual or an authorized person that needs to look at it. So all of that was put in place. So that's one of the major efforts that we've undertaken. So then when you think about something like Inovalon, right, we have our data set, and then they have additional data that they have. They'll have medications information. They'll have also, claims information. We're very rich on laboratory information. So then we brought that together, and from that are able to then create a number of different views, or what we call a number of different data diagnostics. And so the way to think about that data diagnostics is it's a suite of hundreds of patient-specific data analysis or view that can then be ordered, individually on demand by the clinician at the point of care and it fits within their existing workflow. Because the other thing that we did is that we said, okay, so we have this phenomenal suite of data diagnostics. How do we integrate it into the workflow? Right, so that the provider doesn't have to learn something new. And I think that's one of the beauties of Inovalon and Quest coming together is that we have our menu, our test menu and other services, on a menu. So we said, let's add these data diagnostics to our menu. The doctors already know how to order it. It already fits in the workflow. And so the combination of not only able to order it easily from a menu that you already know how to order, but then, providing these real-time on-demand data diagnostics, it really is a novel approach. So we really are leveraging our information assets, our workflow tool that, our physicians are very used to interacting with us because we've had, our ordering tool in the market for 10 years. So they're very familiar with how to order, something from us. And then adding more context to the results that we deliver through the combination of our data set and the Inovalon data set for that population of patients. And that's how we've pulled that together. So it really is a foundational step first of bringing our information and structuring it and tagging it, combining it with their information set, and then using an existing physician portal and workflow that the physician is already knows how to order through to add these new services and these new offerings. So just to give you a perspective, we signed the contract with Inovalon at the end of September, and we were live in our workflow tool by December 20th. So it's also speedier because now our data is now well organized. So for us to then be able to go to market, we can go to market pretty fast, which is one of the goals of our transformation program, right? Is how do we go to market a lot faster?
Excellent. Great overview. One of the things, of course, as you're walking through this and as we're describing the amount of data that now can be leveraged to add such tremendous value to the enterprise, to your enterprise's customers, perhaps even more importantly, how do you think about security? Does security fall under your purview as well? And I'm curious how you think about balancing innovation and the many innovative uses of information that we've just described with safeguarding the information as well.
Absolutely. So, yes, security does fall under my purview, and we do have a very strong security team. And, my philosophy on that is that innovation, we're always, and it is, you're absolutely right, it is a balance between, how do you drive innovation and in a speedy way, but at the same time, knowing that we're protecting, some very important assets. And so, one of the things that I'm a big, it's one of my mantras and I'm a big believer in, is that when you develop solutions, do not make security an afterthought. You really have to develop the solutions with security baked in as part of the design. when I talked about earlier about our design and architecture team, we have a very not only common but also stringent process that any solution that we're thinking about, we always really look at it also from a security standpoint, how we're going to make sure. And that's why I spend time talking about the authentication and the access and the way that, you know, who can view the information. So we actually bake in security into our design. And I think that that's a very, to me, it's the, not only the responsible thing to do in this day and age, but just generally speaking, I think it's much better when you think that way and you define it up front than when, A, it's an afterthought, because, you know, then you could miss something or there could be vulnerabilities. We do have a security team that's very experienced, and they work and they review every single solution. So in that review process, when we're making a determination of what the solution is, and then also if we're going to approve it, at both of those steps, there's also a discussion about, okay, what are the security elements of that? And then in the approval process, we make sure that there's, you know, the security aspects have been, are in the design and are part of the project, you know, the project plan. And that's, again, I'm a big stickler about that, just because what we're protecting is sensitive. You know, it's such a sensitive information. And as you probably have seen, there's been a number of incidents, right, in our industry. And so we're very cognizant and very focused on that.
I also wanted to cover, Lydia, you are a board-level CIO. You're on the board of Gannett. And I wanted to talk to you a bit about the genesis of that experience, having worked with and counseled and spoken with a great number of your peers as CIOs. Many of them have the goal of following in your footsteps, of gaining board access. And I wonder if you could talk a bit about the process of gaining access, the realization that that was something that was a goal of yours, the process of engaging and finding, or in this case, perhaps the board finding you, and how the opportunity sort of arose.
So actually, the opportunity, how it came to be was, well, it is something that I felt that it would be a good development opportunity for me. And so I was fortunate enough that one of the board members of a company that I work with in the past felt the same way. She felt that it would be a good development experience for me. And so, you know, she raised it to my boss at the time and said, hey, you know, I think this would be a good experience for Lydia. And, you know, I'd like to connect her with, you know, a company that's looking, you know, some board members. And, you know, she felt that it would be a good development experience for me. And that's how it started. And so then I had the introduction to the person at this company that was doing sourcing, you know, for boards. And, you know, we met, we discussed the background, and it's one of those things, you know, that you have that interest, you have that first meeting, and then you really then, you know, think about, okay, there's going to be a good fit for something. It has to be the right fit, because being there now, it's funny, you know, somebody tells you, and you don't recognize them as pearls of wisdom at the time. But you realize that it really is about the fit. And because I do think that there's a lot of, you know, very smart, knowledgeable, and, you know, a lot of experienced technology executives out there. And it really is, you know, looking at, okay, the interest is there, and then having the opportunity to, you know, meet with those companies and then showing, you know, seeing if it's a good fit. So I would say, you know, the advice that I would have is get involved. One of the things that I did before I joined the public board is that I served as an advisory board member for a data company. It's a private company, but again, that was a great opportunity to really gain that, because there is a shift in your mindset a little bit. You know, when you're in a line job, you operate a certain way, and, you know, you're always on the go, and you're responsible for a strategy and for the execution of that strategy. One of the important shifts, as you know, if you're going to be a board member, whether it's an advisory board member on a private company or a board member in a public company, is that you are in an advisory role. That means that it is management strategy, it is their plan, and, you know, our job is to really say, okay, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? And really looking at the overall business, does it all tie together? Does it all make sense? And it's very much, it's a different kind of role than in a, being in a line management role. So I would definitely recommend, you know, serving on a either a private, you know, setting or, you know, non-for-profit board. It's good to have those kind of experiences before, I think, taking the step to a public board. And I thought that, you know, that sequence of being on the advisory board of a data company really helped to prepare me for not only the conversations that I had as I was going through the interview process, but also the mindset that has to shift, you know, because you are more in an advisory role as opposed to your tendency. You know, if you're like me, tendency of a line leader is you hear somebody's plan and you're like, hey, you need to do this, 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 and that. It's a very different role, right, when you are in more of a advisory role where, you know, you bring something different besides expertise. It really is a critical view, a critical in a good way, right, in that you really look at that business plan, you look at that strategy, you anticipate how what the response is going to be from the market, and you get a chance to do that because you're not in the day-to-day. So you have an opportunity to step back and say, okay, that's the strategy, you know, ask the questions, but also what's going to be the response from the market, the response from the competitors, the response from the industry, the response, you know, from Wall Street. And that, I think, it's a great opportunity because typically we're in it, right? We're in the day-to-day, we're marching to our own execution plans. That role of being, having the ability to look out enough, but you're in enough, I think it really is a very enriching experience. And I've learned a lot through my experience on the board. And I definitely, you know, recommend that, you know, if people are, if that's a goal, or if that's something that somebody aspires to, it's really, I would say, try an advisory board as a first step and get engaged, even in a non-for-profit board, because there's things that you will learn from those experiences that help to prepare for a public board.
And just hearing the early part of your description of your responsibilities and your team's accomplishments, it's no wonder that you've been asked to join a public board. As I know, a lot of companies, public and private, are thinking about both the opportunities that technology can provide, opportunities like the ones you've described with the analytics, various analytics capabilities you've developed, but also weighing security issues, as you mentioned before, the fact that so many prominent names in many different industries now have been hit by security issues of one sort or another. And both of those, just to name two, represent opportunities for a strong technologist to lend advice in a time of great opportunity and a time of great complication in each of these areas. So does it stand to reason in your mind that companies are going to be looking for more technologists to join boards?
You know, I do think so. And I also, it is very good to think about that because, again, you know, I always, and, you know, my feeling on boards is that you bring perspectives both on a specialized people who have been there, done that. So you're really bringing together different perspectives. And I do believe that there is like an intersection, right, where more and more companies, I always think there's two kinds of companies, right? There's companies that are digital, they're born digital, and there's companies that are trying to become digital. And so you do need that perspective as a board, and especially, you know, from a cybersecurity standpoint, like you mentioned, also from there's technology providing and the rate of change and the rate of innovation. It's so fast-paced these days that it is important to have that perspective and to, you know, to ensure that the board as a whole, you know, has at least one expert, you know, on the board that can speak to those topics, that can bring that perspective from having that experience and having implemented those solutions and living that. That I think I do expect more and more boards are going to be, you know, wanting that expertise. And I do think it comes from different dimensions. One is just the fast pace of innovation in technology and the fact that technology is really such an enabler more and more. The analytics, right? You know, one of the things that I joke about a little bit is that we've been a big data company way longer, you know, than the term big data came into being, right? The lessons that you learn and what you can bring to it. So I do believe that, and I do see just from, you know, just from the interest that I see, because, you know, again, fortunate enough that I get contacted, you know, quite a bit, I am seeing that just from the calls, you know, that I see coming across and the interest. And interestingly enough, it used to be, you know, it might be, you know, a technology company, not anymore. It really is more what I call, you know, those other kind of companies, like the classical, more non-technology companies, that I'm seeing that interest come more and more as they recognize, wait a second, you know, technology is such an enabler to be safe, for whether it's for supply chain or whether it's for your logistics or whether it's for the way you interact with customers on the retail side or on, you know, on more, you know, B2B types of businesses. That I'm definitely seeing it, and I'm glad for that, because I believe that there's still some room, you know, there's still opportunity. So I think for us as CIOs, and for the rest of the field, I think we're going to see more of that, which I'm very happy about.
That's great. It's been a wonderful conversation.
All right. Take care.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategies' five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.